Next, we invite item O, court facilities, the Napa seismic experience. We welcome Administrative Presiding Justice Brad Hill from the 5th District Court of Appeal, Chair of the Court Facilities Advisory Committee, Judge David Rosenberg, Judicial Council Member and Liaison to the Superior Court of Napa County, and Mr. Richard Feldstein, Judicial Council Member and Court Exec Officer, Superior Court of Napa County. This is informational.
Thank you very much, Chief and members of the council. We wanted to give you an update as to the efforts in Napa with respect to the recent earthquake and what happened to the court facilities there. But at the same time, we wanted to give you an overview as to what we are potentially facing statewide with respect to seismic risk. Now, I've been before you many times, and many times I've talked to you about the risk factors that we face, and one of the key ones, certainly, in the future that we need to address and that we are slowly addressing is the seismic risk. We are building courthouses throughout our state not because we want nicer facilities for judges, for court staff, or for the public. We're building new facilities throughout California, mainly because most of our facilities are decaying, are dangerous, are ADA inaccessible, and are seismically very risky. And as to that last point, back in 2002, we retained a consultant, Rutherford and Shaquin, to do an assessment of all of the courthouses throughout the state of California. They found that of our 7 million square feet, or that of our 11 million square feet, 7 million square feet, about two-thirds of all of the court-occupied space is located in seismic level 5 buildings. Level 5. Those, and we'll tell you a little bit about what the state architect tells you about what a level 5 building means. But one example of that is San Diego, that lies directly over an earthquake fault. It sits on an earthquake fault. So you combine that with a level 5 building, and you have not just a risk, but a critical risk. And that's one of the reasons, certainly one of many reasons, why we're building a new courthouse in San Diego. But what does level 5 mean to our court employees and to the public that are in those buildings day in and day out? Now, the California Division of State Architects tells us that with the continued use of level 5 buildings, we can anticipate, number one, substantial loss of life. Two, substantial structural damage, including building collapse. And three, total building disruption. And keep in mind that's 7 million of our 11 million square feet throughout the state. Currently, the funded court construction projects that are completed or underway replace approximately 1.6 million square feet of the seismic risk level 5 buildings. Only 22% of the 7 million square feet of those dangerous buildings. As you know, each year the Judicial Council adopts a list of unfunded projects for the Superior Courts referred to as the Trial Court Capital Outlay Plan. There are about 100 projects on that list, all of which need to move forward. About 60% of those projects replace or improve Level 5 buildings. Now, these numbers tell us, obviously, that there's a long way to go before we have safe and secure courthouses in California. Now, all of us on the Court Facilities Advisory Committee urge you, certainly, to stay the course with respect to the building program. The building program is on the right track. We just have to move faster. Our Courthouse Cost Reduction Subcommittee, over the past 2 years, has reduced costs over, and over $300 million. I think the number right now is $380 million. So while we're certainly building for the future and trying to build safe and secure courthouses, we have an eye toward costs and a keen eye that will continue in the future because each and every courthouse project has to go through the courthouse cost reduction process. Now, the recent Napa quake and the resulting damage to the courthouse, it's certainly a graphic reminder that if we fail to provide the public and our court staff with safe and secure courthouses, the result could be devastating. That quake occurred in the middle of the night. But if a quake like that occurs in one of our facilities during the middle of the day, we'll be giving you a much different report. I'm very pleased to present two colleagues who are well known to you, who will tell us a little bit more about what happened in Napa and the efforts that are ongoing to bring that court back up to speed. Judicial Council members Judge Rosenberg and Napa Superior Court Judge CEO. Nice to have you as a judge. CEO Rick Feldstein, both of whom are going to give you an update as to what has been occurring over the last several months. Turn over to you, Judge Rosenberg, first.
I have a fairly brief presentation. Rick Feldstein has about an hour and a half slideshow. But on September the 3rd of 2014, I did visit the Napa Superior Court. It's one of the liaison courts assigned to me. I did spend time with Presiding Judge Rod Stone and with the Court Executive Officer Rick Feldstein, who is sitting on my right. I did take a quick tour of their criminal courts building. It is located in lovely downtown Napa. As we all know, the county of Napa was the epicenter of a 6.0 earthquake. It struck at 3:22 a.m. on Sunday, August 24. I know that because I was woken up in Davis, a couple counties over, looked at the clock, and it was 3:22 a.m. Obviously, the impact of that quake on the court buildings and operations was the central focus of our discussions at my visit. I first want to give you a little background. The Napa Superior Court is a relatively small court. It has six judges and two commissioners. The court operates with a staff of 70 at the current time. At one time, it had a staff of 95. Prior to the Great Recession and the loss of considerable revenue by the court system. The court operates from three buildings, the criminal courts building, which was built in the late 1990s, one courtroom at the juvenile hall, and then the historic courthouse in downtown Napa. The historic courthouse was actually built in three phases. I'm sure Rick will fill us in on this. And it really comprises three separate buildings. The easternmost structure was built in the 1870s, the middle section was built in the 1920s, and the westernmost part, which houses the jury assembly area and family court services, was built in the 1970s. When I entered the criminal courts building for my meeting with the PJ and the CEO, I stopped first in the restroom, and I was met with a sign that said, "Cosmetic damage only, restroom is open." That certainly gave me a hint that the earthquake had had its effects, some visible to the visitor and some internal damage only visible to the trained eye. The criminal courts building did sustain some damage but continues to be usable. That is fortunate because the historic courthouse sustained great damage and was red tagged, completely unusable for the foreseeable future. All staff from the historic courthouse, including the civil courts, had to be moved over to the criminal courts building. As to the historic courthouse, the oldest section built in the 1870s sustained considerable damage. If you move the clicker, I did take a couple photographs. They may be visible, and we'll put them up in a moment. The other two sections sustained no significant damage. However, there may be some lead paint used in those sections, and lead paint dust may need to be remediated before people can move in. There's a photo that I took over the keep-away fence of the front facade of the historic courthouse. You can see the visible damage. The entire front corner just fell out, and obviously there's more damage inside. Judge Stone told me that he's lived in his entire life in Napa, and, quote, "This was the strongest earthquake I've ever felt." In fact, if you click forward, I did take one other photograph. This is the building across the street, immediately across the street from the historic courthouse. You can see the shaker did impose a lot of damage. CEO Feldstein and Judge Stone went down to the historic courthouse early the Sunday morning at 6 a.m. After the earthquake struck. Remarkably, when they got there, there were several Judicial Council staff members already on scene at the historic courthouse at the time the PJ and the CEO arrived. That's remarkably responsive. In fact, if you look in the dictionary under the word responsive, there are photos of the Judicial Council staff members. Apparently, Judicial Council staff arrived on scene between 4 and 5 a.m., literally about an hour after the earthquake, to assess the damage. Judicial Council staff members immediately on the scene, even before the sun up, included risk manager Jim Mullen, FMU leadership M.R. Gayfell, and Mike Murphy, and Office of Securities Ed Alistad. P.J. Jones stated, talk about Johnny on the spot. Early reports from Judicial Council staff note that the historic courthouse experienced extensive structural damage, water main break, fire system failure in an unreinforced historic section, which involves hazardous materials, and less damage in the new sections. Early estimates, I was told, are upwards of $10 million in restoration, which may be required. The County of Napa still owns the historic courthouse building and is liable for repairs pursuant to the transfer agreements. Approximately $20,000 in emergency work had been spent at the date I visited. The historic courthouse is red tagged by the fire marshal. It's surrounded by a fence and a security guard. The criminal courthouse sustained some damage, including non-functioning elevators, water heater damage and leaks, fallen ceiling tiles and lighting fixtures, boiler low pressure, and startup problems. Repairs were made. Court operations were fully available the Monday morning after the earthquake. The fire marshal has green tagged the building. Emergency repair work and remediation for the criminal court's building totals about $40,000 to date. Both Judge Stone and Mr. Feldstein had nothing but praise for Judicial Council staff's response to the earthquake and also other services the court receives, particularly from the legal office in the area of labor relations and employee issues. In terms of court operations, Judge Stone said about Napa, this place is the best. Our staff, CEO, judicial officers are incredible and they work as a team. The only other thing I will mention is, apart from the earthquake damage, Napa, as are many courts, is just getting by on the thin edge, trying to keep expenditures in line with revenues. Under WAFM, Napa turned out to be a donor court, and they are very worried that they will actually lose money next year unless there is a substantial infusion of money to support the trial courts. According to the CEO, if WAFM were implemented at 100%, Napa would lose 20% of its current budget. Because of the thin margin, Napa has had to reduce employees to a 37.5-hour work week, essentially imposing a 2.5-hour each week of unpaid furlough, and effectively giving the employees a 6.25% pay reduction. So Napa is one of those courts that is doing their best to operationalize. By the way, I looked up that term operationalize because I think the first person to use that term in memory was the governor. And if you look it up in the dictionary, I defy you to explain what it means. In any event, I'm going to turn it over to CEO Feldstein, who will take it from here.
Thank you, Judge, and good morning to everybody. And as Judge Rosenberg mentioned, I have an hour and a half presentation, but since we have to be out at noon, I'll limit it to 45 minutes, if that's okay with everybody. Anyway, just to add to what has been said, of course, residential areas were also hard hit. Homes had to be evacuated, and infrastructure was damaged throughout the city. Now, let me say one thing. I've gone to dinner over the last few months with a lot of people in this room, so I have to warn everybody that the next slide might be rather disturbing to you, and you may want to avert your eyes. But yes, we lost a lot of wine in Napa. Big casualties there. In fact, I think I had more calls from friends and family outside of the area asking about the wineries than my house or my kids. Anyway, immediately afterwards, the red tag area, many buildings had to be red tagged. Temporary fences were erected, scaffolding. The press arrived in groves. I think, you know, there are probably 20 different news teams out there all focusing their cameras on the same pile of bricks for a week at a time. It was a rather interesting experience unto itself. The effects on local government were profound. Virtually all justice agencies and all attorney offices in Napa are located in the immediate downtown area, and all were immediately displaced by the earthquake. They just couldn't even get back into their facilities that next morning. Since then, they found temporary facilities, but as you can imagine, that transition has been momentous and difficult. Perhaps most problematic, the jail was badly damaged, as well as the tunnel between the jail and our criminal courts building, and the counties had to find room for inmates in alternative facilities, both inside and outside the county. So just as a quick overview, as Judge Rosenberg mentioned, we have three courthouses. Our juvenile court is not in the downtown area and really had no damage. The criminal courts building, some minor superficial damage, although we did have some significant water damage due to pipes breaking. And the historic courthouse, of course, major structural damage, major system damage, and that building was immediately red-tagged. To understand the damage to the courthouse, you really have to understand, as Judge Rosenberg said, it's really kind of three buildings put together. The area to your right, where you see historic wing, was built in 1878, and then in 1916, a separate building was built behind it with a space in between, which is our Hall of Records, where we have our jury assembly room and family court services. And in 1977, the infill was built between the two, making it one building. As I said, the historic courthouse was immediately red-tagged. Half of our judicial officers and probably two-thirds of our staff had to immediately be moved into our criminal courts building and space found for them. We're all very cozy in there. I say we have an employee in every nook and cranny and every closet. And it's been an interesting, actually, team-building exercise in that respect, where people have gotten to know each other much better than they have in the past between the two buildings. But we did lose our jury assembly room, four courtrooms, jury deliberation room, our civil and family clerk's office in total, self-help center, family court services. The county law library is located there. We lost that. Legal research offices, court administration, HR, and IT. The nature of the damage to the historic courthouse is in the historic area includes a badly damaged roof line that's separated from the walls, as well as, you know, you see the hole in the masonry. It looks like somebody hit it with a mortar. And you can see that both from the outside and looking out from the inside with the light coming through. There's cracks throughout the building that will have to be remediated, and really the damage behind those cracks still remains to be determined. Of course, we had the usual mess inside. Furniture, books, everything spewed everywhere, but that was the least of our problems, and those are being further evaluated through the interior structural damage assessment. Just to give you kind of a flavor for it, with some photographs, and I'll focus on the courtrooms there because office area is fairly easy to find in terms of temporary space. Trying to find areas for suitable for a temporary courtroom is much more problematic. This is one of our historic courtrooms. You see tremendous plaster damage, and the masonry work revealed in between. This is Department A. Fortunately, it's perhaps a little bit worse than, or not quite as bad as it looks. Because there was no masonry damage in this particular courtroom, but a lot of work will need to be done to bring it back to what it was even still. This is the back wall of our other historic courtroom there, and this damage is much more problematic. You see the plaster damage, but what's not so apparent in this photograph of this wall is that it's no longer straight up and down. It's actually concaved inside towards the courtroom, and there is a great deal of structural masonry damage that will have to be even shored up just so they can get in to clean it up and make it safe for people to go in for any purpose whatsoever. This slide kind of shows how far out the bricks are sticking. So this is a real problem for us in this respect. Justice Hill talked about the need to consider the amount of damage that could be caused from an earthquake, and you just can't consider though the structural damage or the system damage to the buildings. In fact, there's a tremendous amount of collateral damage. In this particular case, although we don't have any asbestos problems, we do have a severe lead dust and mold abatement problem in the building that is currently being remediated. If you look at the table in the photograph on the left, that looks like powdered sugar on top. It's all lead-laden dust, and that's how much gets stirred up by an earthquake in an old building like this. And that has to be very carefully cleaned up before it's reoccupied. The mold problem was largely caused because we had a fire suppression system pipe break. Unfortunately, the city was not able to get the water turned off due to problems with the valves out in the street that the city's responsible for. And that water continued to leak for at least a week, and I think probably longer, into the second floor and cascade down into the first floor in one of the corners of the building, causing a tremendous mold problem. Unfortunately, had a heat wave, which added to humidity, which I'm sure was problematic. And the remediation effort for these kinds of problems is just so extensive, expensive, time-consuming, and it's just amazing all the work that needs to be done just to clean up the courtroom and get some of the areas that we can reoccupy back in order. You see all the specialized equipment. People have to go on with hazmat outfits and a vacuum every service with what are called HEPA vacuums, specialized vacuum cleaners, and then wipe down all the services with specialized wipes. And that includes desk surfaces, walls, papers, personal items that are out on the desk. It's an incredibly difficult and long process to go through and very expensive. In terms of the water damage, at this point, we've had to strip down many of the walls to their 2x4s, and they will have to be reconstructed, which would certainly add to the cost of this whole process. So, talk a little bit about the actual response to the network, to the earthquake. Our initial goal was to be open for business that Monday morning at 8:30. And in fact, we were, and all of our calendars were heard as normally they would have been, but again, all in our criminal courts building. We quickly moved all of our judicial officers and staff from the historic courthouse over, found temporary space after the Judicial Council verified the safety of the criminal courts building. We also had to address some water leaks before that could happen, but I got it again. Echoing Judge Rosenberg's comments, I really got to hand it to the Judicial Council staff who worked just so quickly and tirelessly to get that done. And of course, you're always concerned about your technology infrastructure that needed to be stabilized, and then just generally cleaning up, and it was a real mess. My PJ was down, I was down in my grubbies, our management staff, and ultimately our employees, everybody grabbed a broom and a mop and went to work, and it was really quite a team effort. I got to hand it to everybody. Our long-term plan is to convert one of our judicial libraries into a chambers, which is well underway. The county, which is ultimately responsible for the cost of repairing that building because it is a county-owned facility, although it's managed by the Judicial Council, is willing to build out a temporary file storage into a temporary courtroom for us. We will convert our jury assembly room once we get back into it, which should hopefully be within the next couple of weeks, into a temporary courtroom. And that will give us two of our four courtrooms back. And once we're able to reoccupy the 1977 portion, we will have a third courtroom back, and we think we can limp by for probably 2 to 4 years. While the half of the building, the 1878 portion, is basically segregated from the rest of the building and considered a complete separate building altogether and repaired during that period of time. Just a few words about lessons learned from the whole experience. I can't begin to impress upon everybody the value of electronic case files. We are fully electronic in all case types, although we do have paper files that are kind of legacy left over quite a bit. For all civil and family law cases, which were substantial, those files were no longer available, mainly because of the lead dust. They would have all had to be cleaned individually, almost page by page. So we relied upon our electronic files, which we could access from any location in the court system, because we have standard PC images and roaming profiles where any employee can log into any PC anywhere and get to their desktop and all their normal resources. Of course, you can also really have to be concerned about generator power, which we were fortunate enough to have and got us through the short period of time we didn't have any electricity and the proper redundancy. One thing that was a little surprising to me was the fact that I always felt that I could rely upon my cell phone in these sorts of emergencies, when in fact what I found out was that there are so many people getting on the system to look at the internet, to make cell phone calls out or whatever, it was totally overloaded. You had to go outside of the downtown area to get a decent signal and many times. So just to mention something, I talked with this the Judicial Council security staff, and there is a process where you can get, as a governmental agency, certain priorities. And if you have an emergency response plan, you might want to check into including that. And then the last thing I'd leave you with is just the complexity of the, all the multiple agencies involved in the efforts of trying to recoup from this kind of emergency. Of course, we have the court and judicial council involved because they're ultimately responsible for getting us back into those portions of the historic courthouse that we can use while it's being constructed. And then the county of Napa is the owner. But throw into that, on top of that, the State Office of Emergency Services and FEMA is now involved. It's a bit like herding cats because, again, all these agencies have their own insurance companies and their own set of architects and engineers, and sometimes they end up working at cross purposes and fouling each other up. I have to give a shout out to the Judicial Council staff, though, facility staff, who have shown great leadership among these groups and really keeping them on track for the betterment of our court and getting us back operationally. And just to add again to what Judge Rosenberg has said, the Judicial Council facility staff have exhibited tremendous leadership, and they've been on top of every detail and have made this as smooth as possible of a transition for us. So we really appreciate all of their efforts, including the people that Judge Rosenberg mentioned.
Thank you. Justice Hull.
Thank you, Chief, and thank you for the report. A question came to mind. Maybe Justice Hill tell me, given the statistics that you gave us in your opening remarks, it appears to me that approximately 64% of all of the courtroom space in California is subject to a level 5, if that was the term, threat, which to my understanding means that if any one of those courthouses were hit with any sort of a major quake, at least during the week, that there would literally be loss of life. And the thing that I'm wondering is whether we have or we expect to make both the legislature and the governor aware of these hard statistics, and especially perhaps the legislators who are representing districts in which these courthouses are located. I don't know if it would do any good whatsoever, but at least they would be on notice of the danger to their constituents.
I definitely think that we should do that, and we will do that over the coming months. It's one of those things, Justice Hall, that until something like Napa happens, you don't focus on what could happen in your backyard. And it's not isolated. It's not just Napa. It's not just San Bernardino. It's not just L.A. We have so many counties that when you have a level 5 building, it doesn't take much. And so I think that we need to, when we talk about any number of things, I mean, obviously the security in our courtrooms or courthouses is severely lacking. We have courthouses, some in Northern California, where 60% of the courthouse is inaccessible to people with disabilities. And we've talked a lot about that, and we probably haven't talked enough about the seismic risk. And so I think that in our coming discussions, we will definitely highlight that with the legislature and anyone else who will listen, because it's certainly something that is important, and we don't want to be explaining why we didn't have structurally safe buildings after a catastrophic event.
Yes, Judge Nadler.
Thank you, Justice Hill. To add to that, there has been some recent studies that have been reported on in the last few weeks. In particular, there is a study that just came out and talked about, as concerns Sonoma County, Rogers Creek Fault, estimating that there will be a 7.1 earthquake at any time. That is one of four major faults that is primed to go. 7.1, I believe, is about 100 times more powerful than that which struck Napa recently. There are several courthouses, including the courthouse that I inhabit, which is level 5. So perhaps in our efforts to contact the legislature and the executive branch, we could include or partner with the geological U.S. Geological Office or any other scientific office that has this data, because it is frightening. Having been in San Francisco in 1989 and watching the streets sway as if it were a wave in the ocean, and then, of course, waking up in the middle of the night wondering whether I need to run up to my courthouse to see if there's any damage, it is sobering. And I think it's, you know, I think we do need to focus on the earthquake issue, and we do need to focus on it as soon as possible, especially with the data that we're now hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Anderson. We appreciate this presentation. I think we're all on guard about what's happening and what precautions we can take. We especially appreciate the takeaways that NAP has been able to share with us. And as Justice Hill pointed out, the fact that it occurred at 3 in the morning saved us all from a lot of heartache, but that was random. So we appreciate that we're on notice, and I trust that we'll be working on ensuring that through the CEOs and the PJs, every court has reviewed its disaster plan. While you were talking, I just sent Frank an email about reviewing our disaster plan and electronic files. I saw his face when he saw it. So we appreciate this, and we'll learn from it, and we'll be working on this. Thank you.
Thank you very much.